KDW iRadio 76 proudly presents the 515 Show with your host, John Sarver. Who's at the 515 door today?
It is All Ford Day. I just noticed it. We have a producer, David, in the corner, is just waving the FAMOCO flag. And it's like, well, we'll get you later. Anyways, it is amazing. Talk about nothing but fun Ford things, and this is where it gets cool. We just had, of course, Brian Wolf, the legendary Brian Wolf, who knows nothing else but Ford blue in his body system. And here's another guy that's campaigned Fords for how long? We're going to find out. It is John Tompkin from the Great Lakes Gassers. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
Dandy yourself. You know, we just thought about that. How long? Well, first of all, let's just say that you have what car? A fine Falcon.
A 1960 Falcon.
There you go, kiddies. And it's not that fancy, stancy 67 Falcon with all the squared off bodies. No, no. This is the classic, kiddies.
First year.
And most aerodynamic.
Yeah, kind of. It's like pushing a brick that was dropped on the ground a couple times.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, being a gasser, you're not like great scraping the ground in front.
No, I definitely have the ground clearance. I have no issues going through the pit if it's a little bumpy.
Now, let's go back to the history of this car, because it does have some history to it, doesn't it?
It has some history. I'm the only race history that it has, but my grandfather gave me this car back in 1987, completely stock, 144, three on the tree. It was heater delete. Radio delete.
Heater delete?
Yeah, no heater. Not, it didn't even have a heater core in it.
Did he live?
He got it down in Florida. The car was based in Texas, from what I could tell. Sold and lived in Texas most of its life. And then, my grandfather gave it to me in stock condition and brought it up. It was okay. It was a Southern car, but it had a few flaws to her. And originally it was going on the street. It was going to be my first car on the street. And as things progressed, my dad said, listen, I don't know about having a 351 as a kid out on the street. If you want, we'll make it into a race car and I'll help you do it. So my dad and I started turning into a race car back in 1989. And we brought it out to the track in 93 for the first time at the Lapeer Dragway back in June or July of 93, and that's where I started cutting my teeth. And it's been a race car since 93 till present time.
I was going to say, if it's a dad and lad project, how old were you?
When we started on it, 15.
Yeah. 15?
Yep.
Wow. Okay, so you made your first million by 14 so you could afford this project?
Oh, I'm very lucky. My dad is a tool maker by trade and extremely talented. And he's always been in cars his entire life. Grew up in a great era in the 60s there. And so I was lucky. I was very lucky to have a very supportive father and a mom who didn't get too concerned on what we were doing in the garage on a nightly basis.
Don't worry, Mom. Just keep bringing the coffee and the cookies. Thanks.
Yeah. The police weren't over, so we were in good shape.
I was going to say, where did this 351 come from? It just happened to be sitting on the ground, or?
Well, the interesting thing with that, so as they used to do when you took driver's training, a lot of times you took it at your high school. And we had the cars we drove on the road, and we had the cars that we drove in the parking lot, the range cars. You know, you went around the cones and everything. And this, the original 351 was in a, oh gosh, it was a 70-something LTD.
Wow.
And they were scrapping the car out the summer after, and I said to the auto shop teacher, hey, how much would it cost me to get that motor? And for the entire $50 I had, I got a complete 351 in transmission.
Now, so, I'm thinking in the LTD, I'm not thinking we're talking, you know, 1130 Holley Dominator on that.
No, I believe it was probably like an Autolite 350 CFM or something along that line. That didn't stay on long. That was a good prop for putting the air cleaner on, and then that disappeared. So,
you know, how did that work out with you and your dad? Did you make a list and go, okay, we got the black. Probably it's never been raced if it's going around cones, you know. And here's a list of stuff that we want to do first.
Well, it basically started off fairly stock. You know, we changed the intake and obviously with the Holley carb, you know, all the things that you'd find in a Ram Charger catalog, but we were swap meet guys. We hit the swap meet. So, you know, but, pretty basic. The car started off with a very mild Edelbrock camshaft and, an Offenhauser single four barrel intake and a 750 Ooh. Vacuum secondary. And,
Ooh.
You know, just a basic rebuild. Nothing crazy, stock rod, stock pistons, and we were able to tune that motor as it sat. We got it into the 1290s.
Now, wait a minute, before you go any further,
yeah.
For folks around the world right now, and for folks who are new to drag racing, when I'm hoping, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, when John said they tuned it, it had nothing to do with plugging it into an OBD2 with a laptop and changing your fuel map. This was a real tune.
We literally ran point ignition. We had a Mallory dual point distributor.
Big money.
And yeah, and vacuum gauge and a dwell meter, and there you go. I learned the old school tuning, and you know, we made it work. And we had a lot of fun. That motor lasted probably about 8 to 9 years before we started moving to the next upgrade of it. So
you know, the funny thing is, as much as you said that too, I mean, it's funny. One of the worst things that you had to deal with was a timing light. It was like, all right, let's turn the distributor and then blah blah blah. You know, and now you talk about timing lights. You know, the gentlemen over the age of say 35, their eyes go behind their head and they hear like angel music. La! Oh, I remember my first timing light. It was a Sears and it was chrome. And it's like you guys hated these things. You know,
it was, and that was the way to do it. And you threw a vacuum gauge on the carburetor and adjusted your air idle screws and.
Oh,
there
baby.
You go.
Yeah, I mean, make sure you got your chalk nearby so you can get that timing thing. Then for kids who didn't know, and I bet you, John, and see if this is true with your thing, depending what street you're going on that day, because if your mom's still with us, you didn't race. But
never.
It was, ever at all. You're just trying to get that groceries and help those old ladies cross the street. You would have to either retard it or advance it to see whatever you get, like top end or lower end. And that's how you, that was kind of a cheap version of getting more torque and getting more horsepower, in quotes, you know?
But, right. No, I mean, and then, you know, there was everything from changing the springs for the advancement because it wasn't locked out in the distributor and, you know, all the good stuff, you know? I mean, it was, we ran an old Excel coil and.
Not the yellow one.
The big yellow one.
Oh, hell yeah, baby.
Yeah. Like I said, a Ram Chargers catalog just exploded in some ways on that car, you know. I mean, it was, it didn't look necessarily like a birthday cake, but it was, you know, it had all the things that you remember as a kid that you'd go to speed shops and drool. You'd look at it, oh, this is neat. Oh, I'd like to have one of them. You had no idea, but you looked at it and you enjoyed it.
You know, we had Mr. Dembski on John Dembski with his Rotten Orange. And he said the same thing, and I'm telling you, anybody of that era, of your era, et cetera, could speak in shorthand, because as soon as you got a V8, there in the Detroit metropolitan area and a little bit around, you had Ram Chargers and you had Gratiot Auto Supply, and you had some other folks too. And Gratiot Auto Supply had this huge catalog, you know. What was online? What was a computer? Didn't exist.
Yeah.
And Ram Chargers was just a little bit step up higher because, ooh, they're the Ram Chargers, you know. But these are things that you could walk in after your Friday night, cash your check, and one of the very first things, if you had a V8, somehow, some way, you had to have like a silver aluminum intake manifold with some kind of mismatched carburetor with headers that you could barely afford, and purple hornies and lake... those lake slappers in the back, lakeside? No. You know, everybody did the same damn thing and jack up that car with a couple of Gabriel hijackers. So, you know, you had that funny car rake to it, and it's like, ha! And here's my 323 gear. I'm going to beat everybody. Okay.
Well, and we're sitting in an auto shop, talking in auto shop. You know, you got all your buddies, and we're talking. And a big thing back in the day was the Motec High School drags on Milan Dragway. So that was a big thing in my era that, you know, you went down to. Everybody's thinking how fast their cars are. Well, then you get out to the lie detector test down at the track, and you find out your 11-second car is really a 15-second car. But
air was too hot. Yeah, okay.
You know, but it was that was always the those were good times. Just sit there and you remember reminiscing with the you're thinking about your friends from high school, and we wore out Ram Chargers catalogs looking at them.
Yeah, I mean, it was better than porn. I mean,
hey, the spring catalog's out. We'd all end up at the Ram Chargers,
Yeah, but then look who's at Grand Chateau Supply. Is that Linda Vaughn? Yes, we're going. That's a show.
That, unfortunately, my era, we didn't have too much of that. We just had to go look at carburetors and Edelbrock valve covers hanging on the wall. But that's what we had.
Isn't it funny that you could actually do that? I mean, you could actually take that carburetor home with you today because Grand Chateau Supply would have, and Ram Chargers would too, they would have like a combo special. You know, of course, it was some kind of medium riser intake with some kind of, Holley carburetor for 119, separately, 255.
And then you would get the free Edelbrock air cleaner, or, the one that had the foam in it that when it backfired, it was burned all out.
Yeah, the one that looked like a velocity stack that looked so cool when you parked it, but did so badly to get air into it. Yeah, you're right. One intake, one backfire, and it was cool to your friends, but you went ching.
There goes that,
Isn't it funny how that was like almost universally in that era? That's exactly how you built a car. Whether it ran well or not, you had to have those damn things.
Well, it's times that are, obviously things have changed, and there's still similarities. I mean, if you're lucky enough to live next to Summit, and you can go down to their store and see even more stuff and pick stuff up. But, it's funny. I feel lucky enough to be at the end of the era of the hot rodding before it kind of changed, Things changed a little bit.
Kind of?
Yeah. Well, I mean, tuners are different. I've never messed with them, but it's still a form of hot rodding to some extent, and car culture's car culture, And you like to see it stay alive in some form, but I was lucky enough to kind of get a taste of what it might have been a little bit like, and then be around people who were involved in it when it was like that.
Yeah, but did they get all glassy-eyed and go, "Hey, I remember Woodward. Oh, boy."
Well, it's fun talking to the guys who... I was lucky enough to run at Detroit Dragway before they closed. I did get a couple times down there. But
really?
You talk to the guys who ran at Motor City and Detroit and stuff like that. And then when you get... I'm lucky enough, I've been able to make friends with the Tomozics. And there is so much with that group of people, and they're such great people. It's kind of like living it. And they have a lot of nice stories and a lot of neat stuff. And, it's a good time.
Two of the finest people in racing, especially around here, is Steve and Tim Tomosik, by far. I mean, John hits it right on the head. I mean, if you want to sit down and just have a ginger ale with these guys, you're right. Stories, but stories that you knew, they weren't like, giving you bovine scatology. They actually were there.
Oh, and they had a family member that was there if they weren't there. I mean, it's... the Tomozik family tree, and then if you took their names and you started putting cars with them, it's just amazing. It is amazing. And like I said, they're just, the whole family's outstanding. They're great people, and I'm lucky enough that I was able to kind of hook up with them, and I consider them very good friends. And, it's nice seeing stuff. And like you've seen and said, they've got some great cars and great stories and just nice people, people to hang with.
I can't remember if it was Steve or Tim that we asked, if you guys had like a Christmas party and one of your nieces brought in a new guy, did you work them over to see what kind of car they had?
Well, and I've been to a holiday party before at one of the Tomozics.
Really?
And it is, if you're an outsider, you get looked at a little bit. They feel, they check you out. They see where you're at, but... No, it's and to be invited to that kind of a scenario, you're in good company.
Yeah, but
you've done well.
If you're a 17-year-old kid and you're going into the Christmas party and you're meeting the family for the very first time and you show up with that Toyota.
Well, yeah. And Tim has two daughters, and I don't know what it's like to be their boyfriends, but the the girl's boyfriend's there with Tim and going over the house. I think Tim's pretty easy, but he is a school teacher, so, you know, that can be intimidating too. So,
yeah, I mean, that's got to be a lot of fun, but not as much fun as taking a V8 out of an LTD. I mean, not really known as a Screamer 429, but all right.
351 Windsor with some very nice emissions heads on.
You know, I absolutely do love the fact that you said, you know, you talk to everybody in auto shop because, you know, that's, I mean, did you go to auto shop before you started this project with your dad or after?
I've always hung out with my dad, even as a, you know, young kid working in the garage and going to swap. Back when there was real swap meets, and you'd go to them and you'd get there at 5 in the morning before the gates open and get a good parking spot because I was going to be carrying all the junk back and forth. And I always enjoyed that. My brother, he was not so much into the cars. And I was. So I would go with Dad everywhere, swap meets, flea markets, you know. And right from the 80s, early 80s, I can remember going down to the state fairgrounds in the early 80s. And then different places like Tecumseh, Mason, Michigan, and of course, Midland, when it was the Antique Festival in the early to mid-80s, was quite the sight. Fowlerville, that was always a good swap meet. And then, you know, you had your dealership swap meets in the winter. And so then I just stayed in the car. So high school come along, in 10th grade, ooh, I could take 1 hour of auto shop. I'm in. You know, and then in 11th grade, I was able to take 3 hours of auto shop. So I really enjoyed it, and then it kind of led to my career, so in the automotive.
Yeah, because first of all, we can probably guess which one of your brothers or which one of the boys in your family was your mom's favorite. The one that stayed home.
Yeah, I always thought my brother, he was the favorite there. I don't know. I've been told I ranked up there too a little bit. So we'll see.
How many brothers you got?
I just have an older brother. It's funny. He's a good sport. He'd come to the track. We went and raced at Thompson, Ohio. They had what they called the gas reunion back in the mid-2000s. And we went out there. Well, my brother lived in Pittsburgh, and he would meet us there. Yeah. And my brother's a book guy, financial numbers kind of a person. Ooh. And he would sit there in the trailer and read his book, and he would look out the trailer when I ran the car and go back to reading his book. And, you know, he would participate. It just wasn't his thing.
Wait a minute. Your dad was a skilled trade.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
And you have the gears going through your system. Did anybody check the blood of your brother? Like the DNA?
My brother could probably do the numbers, anything automotive. He just didn't want to touch any of it. Yeah. He could figure the finances and probably figure the numbers out, but he just didn't want to touch it.
Good for him. Okay.
You know?
I mean, it takes, but good. I mean, how many, let's see, so what did you have, 2 years of auto class?
Two, three going into senior year. And then I just kind of stayed in automotive in Oakland Community College. I went to the automotive program there, the servicing and auto body. And I was lucky enough, I was working as a co-op student for Oakland County here, the local government, and I ended up getting over to the garage, the police garage, and staying on with them and eventually being hired full-time and made a career out of it.
So you know how to change shocks on a Crown Victoria?
I can do Crown Vics, Impalas, Tahoes, yeah, I've had a little bit of everything, a little experience and a little of all that.
I was going to say, what was the most plentiful car you had to work on for the fleet?
Oh, well, we've gone many years on Chevy Impalas up till 2016 when they quit making the police version. And that was the car we used, especially during the downturn in the economy, because it was cheap. It was inexpensive to get those.
Okay.
So I got pretty good at working on them. You know, the Crown Vics were decent. When I started, we had the old square box Caprices. And just great police cars, full frame, you know, you could hit the parking brake, spin the thing around, and, you know, no anti-lock brake to get in the way of all the fun, and no traction system, so, you know, just an old 350 TBI, and off they went.
I mean, did you have, like, a Fox Body high-speed pursuit car?
We had Camaros.
I said high speed pursuit.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a couple of the Camaros. No Mustangs. We did not have Mustangs. Our Ford time was short lived with the Crown Vicks.
Really?
Yeah, we didn't have them long. You know, probably about 4 to 5 years, and then we were back to Chevrolet.
What? I mean, yep. Even if you paid off that fleet, I mean, those Crown Vicks are still running somewhere.
We at the auction, we had the cab companies from Chicago, and there's a place. I can't think of the name, but they're out of Chicago. They would Chicago Motors, actually, I guess this would be the name. They would come and buy as many Crown Vicks as they could at auction. And they had, like, you know, if they felt they wanted to pay $3,500 a piece on average, they would roll it. And they would buy these, load them on car haulers, take them back, timing chain, rebuild their rear end, and boom, sell them off to cab companies.
No kidding.
Yeah. No, they were, for 5-6 years, they were always out at the auction, buying anywhere from 10 to 20 of them when they could.
How much does a good cop car go for an auction?
Well, the Crown Vicks, we were seeing up to, you know, $5,000 on some of them back in the late 2000s and that. And then the Impalas right now, they go for about $3,500. And our Tahoes, they're going, you know, anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000.
And I'm thinking that the Chargers go for list price.
We have very few Chargers. Sorry, I know it's a, we need to talk pretty highly about the Mopar products. We have very few.
Yeah, there's a reason, too. You probably wanted to catch somebody. But, you know, the real deal is when you take a look at some of those cars, and especially, I mean, your car, that era wasn't like the most fastest of V8s we've ever seen, even with PI engines inside of them. I mean, what did they use to like warm them up a little bit to make them go a little bit faster?
They actually didn't. The Crown Vicks and all the vehicles, nothing was different between the civilian motor and the police motor, other than they took the top end limiter off. So they really weren't any different. Vic 4.6 was the same Crown Vic 4.6 you would buy in your town car. It just didn't have a top-end limiter on it.
Really?
Nope. The transmissions were kind of improved. They had more of an aggressive shift to them, but they really were no different. Same with the Impalas when they had the 3800s. There was really nothing different with that 3800 other than no top-end limiter.
But, I mean, with the Chevrolet, what kind of gear did they have in the diff? Because they were all rear-wheel drive at that time.
The Caprices, 342 was the gear that we always ordered them with. They would have a 350 TBI engine up until 92. From 89 to 92, they had a 350 throttle body, 700 R4, 342 gear. And they were basically a truck motor. There were four bolt mains. And then the LT1s come out. So, yeah. You know, that was a big deal. They had the LT1 motors and 323 gears, I think, at one point.
Ooh! Really? So you had to catch the bad guy from a 30 roll?
Yeah. Well, and then the Crown Vicks, there was two gear selections. Most of ours had the 355s. We did have a year that came with 327 gears and that.
327?
327, yeah.
Wow. I mean, were you guys doing NASCAR or what?
No, and we weren't. We only had really one major interstate, 75, that went through Oakland County and a little bit of M59 on the east side. So, and we weren't really running highway, but it's just how Ford produced them that year, I guess.
Wow. Because I'm thinking, even with the high-performance Camaro that you had as the true PI, you know, I mean, what was the engine package on that?
We had some of the years they were LT1 motors, and then we ended up, I think they were 90 or 2000s, the last of the one body style Camaro. They were LS, you know, motors, but, you know, not really anything too crazy. Again, top end limiter was off. That was it, automatic emissions, and they put heavy duty oil coolers on some of the cars and trans coolers.
Yeah, well, you'd have to. I mean, if you're idling for so long.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, they do see a lot of idle time. So.
Yeah, I mean that's. But everybody thinks that cop cars, you know, they have, especially in back and forwards, police interceptor. You know, that it's like woo. You know this.
Yeah, no bigger sway bar. You know, stiffer springs, but
I can turn better. Okay.
Vinyl rear seat, vinyl floor, nothing crazy.
Yeah, you know why? Because you don't want people back there yakking all over the place and going, oh. Well,
a lot easier to clean out the car wash.
Yeah, I could about imagine, you know. But now that if you had one of those, how come you didn't, like, say, no, I have my eye on this one, and at auction I'm taking one home?
Because I know how they were taken care of. We took great care of them. I should say,
okay.
I have a good idea of how they were used
in
their career. So, I also ran wrecker, so I got some, I was able to go, you know, pick up some of these issues, so...
Nice job. All right, so now we have the Windsor in the 60 Falcon. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're out of high school and we're out of college. Now what are we doing with the Falcon?
Well, we just continued to run it, and then I think the next progression was we rebuilt the motor, went aluminum heads, did a few things, ran Predator carburetor for probably 7 years on one, got it down into the 11s, you know, just kept enjoying it. It was the car's always been a very good turnkey car. We've always made it very reliable, so we didn't have to mess with it a whole bunch. And, you know, progressed over the years and ended up picking up Edelbrock for a short time, made a 351 Windsor dual four-barrel intake, like a medium rise. And I was able to pick one of them up, and then this is where my grandfather's influence kind of came back at me. So I picked up and we put this intake on, but it really wouldn't hold Holley carburetors, couldn't even put them on sideways.
Ooh.
So my grandfather, he was not into hot rodding, but he was automotive by trade. After World War II, he came over from Canada and opened up a tune-up and carburetor shop in Pontiac, Michigan.
Called?
And, Tompkins Carburetor. And that's on the side of the car. The writing is similar to what one of his signs he had on his garage back in the 50s and 60s. So that's what's on the door of the car. Well, he had a couple of... we had some of his old stock, but he had a couple of... 65 GTO carburetors, AFBs, and they would fit right on this intake. And I got schooled on AFB carburetors, and it's what I still run now. And, you know, it's an old school kind of a look. It's not an Edelbrock, it's a real AFB. You know, some people despise those, and some people like them. I've had no trouble with them. And, matter of fact, we just ran at Stanton here this last weekend with the Great Lakes Gassers, and, the car foot braking still was able to knock off a 1.3760 foot launching it. So the carbs respond just fine.
With the dual quad?
Dual quad, yep.
Wow. Who doesn't like a Carter?
Every once in a while, you know, guys have hard times with Edelbrocks, and they think they see a Carter AFB, a real one, and they relate to an Edelbrock, and you get people to tell you, why don't you put a Holley on it? I like what I got, and it has some meaning to it also.
It's like, look, bud, step back. If you keep bugging me, I'm buying a thermoquad, you know?
Yeah, well, there's some guys who love that stuff, too, and have done well with it.
Yeah, but you take a look at those.
Good luck finding a good thermoquad, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that your grandfather looked at these things, because if you take a look at the difference between a Holley, everything looks like it's there. A Carter says, we are art. Look at everything that we have going on the outside and on the inside, and you had to be a pro's pro. I mean, I tip my hat to your grandfather, who, you know, if he had a carburetor shop, I mean, what was his favorite one to work with, Carter's?
I don't know. I was not around him when he had the shop. He was retired by the point that I was hanging out with Grandpa a lot. My dad said he was extremely well. He was good on everything. He ran a very reputable business, and really, he knew his stuff. I mean, my grandfather was a Cadillac guy. It's for what he enjoyed driving.
Hoorah.
He liked the old Fleetwoods and everything else, and the old Cadillacs. He always had nice road cars. But my dad said he could fix a Rochester and AFBs and whatever else, was out there. Zeniths to who knows. You know, he worked on all of them.
That's skill. I mean, that's real skill. Because if anybody's ever tried to put together a jet, you know, of Venturis and all that kind of stuff, you know, and just make the mixture just right, that's a skill.
Well, and it's, and my dad, even though my dad was a toolmaker by trade, before he started at the trade school, Pontiac Motors Trade School, back in 62, I believe it was, he, of course, worked at my grandfather's shop, and my dad picked up a lot of skills, you know. I mean, of course, a father and son, they always were probably like, yeah, you're not paying attention or something, but my dad obviously paid attention, because he has been on to me, so.
Yeah, but I mean, my God, that is... You know, but now what you have to do is pass that on to your son, right?
Well, and we're working on that. I think we got a pretty good head start. So my son Anthony has a great relationship with my dad. And growing up, he probably spent more time with my dad in the garage hanging out and doing things. And, of course, you know, grandpas are going to let their grandsons get away with pretty much murder and let them play with everything, you know. And yeah. He was taking apart carburetors probably when he was 5 years old, sitting at the bench hanging out with grandpa and messing with carburetors and, you know, just hanging out. And we've got him in a little 62 Chevy 2 right now with a little bit of an interesting twist to it. It's got a inline 6250 with a small little turbo on it.
So, wow. Wow,
yeah,
and that
yeah.
engine can take a turbo. I mean, that bottom yeah. end can all day long.
Well, it's we're running pretty low boost on it, running probably about 12 to 13 pounds. It creeps a little bit in, at the top end, but a boost. But 3 weeks ago, he ran 1176 at 113
wow.
in it up at Ubley.
Wow.
So, yeah, yeah.
I mean, is that now going to be his track, or is he going to be going with you guys?
Well, I mean, he run with us. He ran with the Great Lakes Gassers last year at the Nostalgia Drags, and the year before was his first year. We rushed around. His mom rushed him to get his license, because he was able to get it, but we thought he'd need his license to run at Milan back in 19. So he literally got his license the day before, the Thursday before we left for Milan. And it was so funny, the woman who was giving his driving test, after it was over, said, wow, what was your hurry for getting it? He says, oh, I'm going drag racing. And I guess her eyes just about popped out of her head, but she already signed the paper, so we were good. And, you know, but, yeah, because we, you know, we wanted to make sure he had his license to go down to Milan and race. He was racing on permit at Ubley and running single passes and eighth mile, so he was getting used to it, but we knew we were going quarter mile and wanted him to get some time on that. And he wasn't going as fast then. I think the car was running 13s at like 100 at that point. But still, it's fast, it's moving, and he's done great. He's developing and getting an understanding of it. He's learning how to build boost at the line and creep in, and he can cut a good light too, so that's a little scary.
Yeah, but now take a look at this. Is he doing a six-cylinder just to get seat time and then eventually go pro mod? Or how's this going to go?
Pro mod, I don't know. He he's enjoying this. He I asked him if he had any, you know, want to try the Falcon at some point, because he could run some eighth mile, and we'll just, you know,
yeah,
let him shift a little, you know, a little early and just get used to it. And he's enjoying the Chevy, too. He likes the boost thing. He likes when that that hits and... says it feels good. Throws him in his seat. He enjoys that.
Well,
so,
who made this engine decision for this Chevy? Because that is an unusual combination.
Yeah, so how this all happened, my dad calls me one morning and he says, hey, listen, on Craigslist, there's a Chevy 2 and it says it has a straight axle in it, but it has no pitchers. And I was like, oh, all right. And he says, yeah, they only want $400 for it. I thought, well, this isn't good.
This is a dog. Yeah.
This isn't good. So I called and left a message, and the day went on and never heard anything. I thought, well, whatever, it's gone. Well, the gentleman who was selling it called me later in the afternoon. He says, hey, you're the first one on my list. You know, do you want to take a look at it? Well, he wasn't too far from me. So it was date night for the wife and I, so the dinner did increase on what we were originally going to do for dinner. I let her pick up a little bit because we were going to go look at cars, so I had to, you know, throw a little bonus in that, because she was good with that. ended up going and looking at this car, and it was middle of a field under a lean-to. And
dandy.
It, Yeah, and it was clean. It was okay, but it was a four-door. And I was like, ooh. But on the Chevy 2, whoever did the straight axle, they put a straight axle under it and did the subframe. Yeah. They did it really nice. As my dad said, you know, all the measurements were written in chalk on the firewall. Whoever was doing it before they welded it, they, you know, cross-measured and everything. My dad was like, hey, this is right. My dad doesn't go anywhere without a tape measure either. So he got a tape measure and goes, hey, this is done right, you know.
Toolmaker, okay.
Yeah, so talking to the gentleman who was selling it, he was motivated to get rid of it. And I had a friend of mine come with his truck and trailer and meet us. And it was right before the thaw was out of the ground. Like, it was still frozen.
Oh, dandy.
And we got his truck and trailer back there and loaded it up. So fast forward, we bring this car home. It's a four-door, but it's okay. And it has a newer model Chevy rear end in it. And it's got the straight axle. It's got the brakes. Everything's there. But it doesn't have a motor in it. And I told Dad, I says, you know, we got to do something different if we're going to keep it a four-door. I mean, yeah, you know, you can put a V8 in it, and that's okay. But if you're going to do a four-door, you really should do something different. And we were kicking around doing a straight six anyways. We're going to do like a 292 and normally aspirated. Well, we couldn't find one at the time, nothing that we wanted to pay the money for.
Sure.
And I came across a 250 that was running with a Power Glide. It was coming out of a 64 Chevy 2. And picked it up extremely cheap. And it was like, okay, well, here's a running motor and transmission. And I said, you know, I wonder if we turbocharge it. Of course, we knew nothing about blow-through turbocharging, so we were going at it blindly. And, you know, reading what we could when we could. So we did this. And we did learn that if you're going to do a blow-through through a Holley carburetor, you got to take the brass float out and put a Philonic plastic one in because you will crush it. That's the one thing I can spread the word on. If you're doing this, lose the stock float. It won't make it long. But so we ended up doing it, picking up some pieces here and there. Ran it stock for a couple years. Ended up lifting the head and puking the gasket out of it, head gasket. And then decided to put together a motor that was more capable of holding the boost. And we just redid a 250 and good pistons, had the rods reconditioned and ARP rod bolts and head studs and a really good multi-layer head gasket. And had a custom cam by Bullet ground and off we went. So it just seemed like the perfect car for Anthony to jump into.
Did anybody take this car to a dyno yet?
No. We figure it's probably making 275 horse, something like that.
275 horse from a six-cylinder. And what has he got, a glide in it?
No, we did put a turbo 350. We tried the glide, and it seemed like a good idea with the turbo and the torque that it would work good.
Just bogged?
It just didn't have enough oomph. So we went with a turbo 350, and that extra gear, the lower first gear, really helped get it out of the hole a little nicer. And this last time he actually did a 177 60-foot, so that's pretty good.
I was going to say, but then again, what kind of gear are you running with that turbo?
373 with a 28-inch tall tire.
Nice all-around gear.
Yeah, you know? It shifts at 51 and goes through about 5,300.
You know, his consistency, you know, and I don't know the young guy has, you know, happy feet or anything, but you would think that a turbo 6 with that gear, you'd be the bracket king.
Well, I mean, we haven't run it in any type of bracket race yet, other than, you know, with the Great Lakes Gassers, and that was more just getting out there. He got to find out what it's like to run against, like, John Denske at the time with the Rotten Orange. I think in time trials, he ran against John, and he got to hear his car not... We couldn't tell if the car was running, of course, with John next to you with a little bit of nitro mixed in. And so he got the experience that, and he got the experience in eliminations. I think he dialed a 13 and he ran like a 1050 car and it come by at 125 miles an hour right at the stripe. So he got that feeling, you know. So he's still green and new to this, and we're still tuning on it. So we do a lot of testing too with it.
Well, unfortunately, he kind of lost a little bit of time with everything that's going on in the world, you know. But I mean, is he ready to rock and roll this year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he was out, and he, like I said, he made some passes, and we're doing a few changes to it. You know, we really don't know. The car's gone past our expectations as it is right now. We were pretty happy, and we're looking at having to do a cage in it, you know, and put some safety items into this, because it is picking up speed, and, you know, safe first. I don't need mom choking me, and grandma or mom, you know, so got to keep it safe.
There's no other brother at home to do the
nope.
books? Oh, good.
Nope. He's it.
Good. Good. So now he gets to be dad's favorite.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I never pushed him into this. He just kind of, he developed into it. I mean, he's got a lot of interests away from this stuff, you know, where I was more always automotive oriented. That's what I enjoyed, you know, in my time, that's what I did. Where he has some other thoughts, you know, he does some other things.
All right, so. Talk about other things. What are we going to do with the Falcon this year?
Well, we had a good outing at Stanton here last weekend with the Gassers, and really there's not a lot to do to that car. It's I had to do axles last year. I broke an axle at Milan when I first went out and put new axles in it, and it's good to go. I think it's just going to be kind of a lash the valves again and send it back out and see what happens, you know, and go from there. We've got Great Lakes Gassers. We have an event up at Ubley, and hopefully we got something on the horizon, possibly at Onondaga coming. I know Tim's working on that, and then, you know, we'll see what else develops. We got a race out in Byron, Illinois we're going to go do, and a few other things.
I was going to say, with Milan being a little bit on pause right now, where does Great Lakes Gassers go? I mean, did it just, like, everybody go, oh, great, now where do we go?
Well, that was kind of the thing. We did, Tim put together a quick Zoom meeting, and, you know, it was kind of like, well, what are we going to do, you know? And he started putting up trailers, and then when Onondaga popped back up, you know, there was a lot of excitement. We ran there as a group a couple times, had an awesome time. New owner, you know, they don't know us yet. He was aware of us. And Tim has spoke with him, and I think him and Woody are setting something up, hopefully in the next 30 days. Maybe we might have a date to announce for there. We had a great time up at Mid-Michigan. We've never ran there. Had a really good time. We had 20 cars show up, so that was a good turnout for a early year get-together. And we've had some of the ones that are, you know, standard guys that always show up, like Mr. Densky. You know, he's working on his
new vehicle.
Yeah, which he's keeping very low-key. I don't know what kind of secret handshake you have to get in on that one to know what that is.
I could tell you what it is.
Well, I have an idea, but I think I'm going to wait to be pleasantly surprised in that.
It's a fine Barracuda.
It's a fine Barracuda, huh? Yeah. With Johnny, you never count out anything.
That's true. No, yeah. I mean, we just said that off the wall, but I mean, it's Jesus, you are so lucky. If you've never seen the Great Lakes Gassers, go. If they come anywhere, even if they're not near you, go. Not only are you going to be excited on the track itself, I mean, there's some really nice iron in that club. However, every single human being ranks from being very cool to being maximum cool. And I'm telling you, if you stop by any one of their trailers and stuff, they'll be more than happy to say howdy do to YOU. You know, they're not the stuck up clubs that you kind of seen on TV and stuff. These guys want to talk to you because, you know, they're into the racing, and the Gassers themselves, just phenomenal vehicles. Absolutely.
You know? Well, thank you. And we also, you know, if you have your kids with you, your grandkids, please bring them by. Let's put them in the cars. Let's let them sit in it. We have coloring books. Tim had a coloring book produced with different cars in it. The guys, you know, have their cars. We put crayons in them. A lot of us hand out Hot Wheels cars to the kids as they come by. And just come and see us, you know. And if there's nothing they can hurt in my car, I'd get in there and enjoy it, touch it, see it. You know, we love having the kids in and families. And you're right, we love talking to people and always looking for new members. And if you had questions or you're thinking about it, you know, we'd love to talk to people. And like you said, everybody's great. We have a
yeah
a great group of people. And there's a cast of characters there that are maybe a little more interesting than others.
Oh, aren't they ever? I mean, they are. I mean, you would almost love to have, we'd love to have, I could pick out 14 of your drivers that I'd love to have around one microphone and just open it up and go, so folks, go. Because it's such a good time. And everybody, I don't know if there's like a special drug or something that Great Lakes Gassers take beforehand, but it's like everybody's so happy to be at that track, and we're back to, you know, drag racing. It's kind of like all the problems are on the other side of that fence. When we take everything out of this trailer, it's just good times. And you hear it, and sometimes it's a cliche, but it is extremely true with Great Lakes Gassers. Just a hell of a bunch of people, you know?
It is, and I was lucky enough. So the group started around 2009. Steve Tomozik invited about 8 of us out to Milan. It was actually, which you would have enjoyed this, it was the Mopar event. And Steve had us come in as exhibition. And unfortunately, it rained on Saturday, so it was postponed till Sunday. Mm-hmm. And there was 6 or 7 of us who were able to make it for Sunday. And that's kind of where it all started. Steve got us together, and it was before he was doing his funny car thing. I think he was probably working on it, but he hadn't gone into it yet. And he got us together, and we just kind of went from there. And then the very next year, we ended up in Martin, Michigan for exhibition. I think there was 10 or 12 of us for that event. And then it just went from there. We raced down at Marion, Ohio, as a group. And then Milan kind of became the home track for a lot of the events. And then, you know, it just grew from there. And it's a good group of people. We've got people from Canada, Indiana, Illinois, Pennsylvania, you know, just all over, and nice people.
If you had everybody there, how many cars would you have?
If we had the whole crew show up that has shown up at least once or twice, we'd have, you know, 50, 55 cars if everybody showed up. You know, at the big events, we average about 30, 34 cars, you know, consistently. And we get some new guys every once in a while and that become consistent, you know. And but on average, we average, even to a small event, you know, we can get 20 in, you know, like the one up at Stanton. It's early in the year. There's guys still working on cars. We had 20 cars, and there was probably 4 cars that are normally consistently at every event, never miss one. They just weren't ready yet. So
yeah,
for a one-day quick event, it was a good time.
Everybody's itching to get out.
Oh, yeah. This past year, everybody's been, it's time to call it over, and everybody's ready to enjoy themselves. And,
yeah, I mean, folks want to come out and see you. I know that the drivers want to come out. If you have a 5-year-old grandson, like John said, he'll be more than happy to open the hood of his car, and your grandson can take apart the carburetor and put it back together. So do whatever you want to do.
Hey, that's a great thought. I should bring some old carburetors and let them start taking them apart. I mean, that might be a good idea. Instead of the sandbox, we'll just have a box full of carburetors.
Yeah, go for it, kids. Yeah, that and a little screwdriver. Have fun. Don't lose the springs. Anyways, John, what did we not talk about in one whole minute?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I think we covered everything. I appreciate you guys and everything you're doing for the automotive and racing community, getting it out there. There's so much great energy in Michigan and around, and the different types of racing that's going on, and the different tracks. It's great seeing these tracks, you know, Onondaga opening, Lapeer being redone, Ubley, you know, that's a great group up there. It's Michigan, it's automotive, and it's great to have. There's a spot for everybody. There's a spot for everybody. Come see it.
If people wanted to get a hold of you, John, or whatever, how do they do that?
Well, they can go through our Facebook page, Great Lakes Gassers, or www.greatlakesgassers.com. They can message me direct on Facebook. Tim's email is on the website. Website's going to be updated over the weekend. It kind of got put on the back burner with work and miscellaneous, but we're going to be updating that. And, any questions, reach out to us. If you get to the track, come see us. Come say hi. We'd love to see you. And, you know, it's a great time. It really is. Good group of people.
Because everybody wants to see what your schedule is, because everybody knows you're so Milan heavy, because that was the, you know, hometown track.
Yes.
Now you know, it's looking around, and you're right. People are looking and going, where are they going to be next?
Well, we do have scheduled, and it's a ways off, but the one guaranteed, we are up at Ubley August 14th. We'll be back at Ubley Dragway. Onondaga, I really believe we should have a date in the next 30 days. That's kind of the hope. Tim's working on that. And, you know, we'll keep our fingers crossed that Myland gets open, and maybe we just do an impromptu thing, you know. Go out and support the track when it opens. It doesn't even have to be our complete group. We'll come out as a group just to support it and run whatever they're doing and, you know, get out there.
Yeah, I do believe that Gassers have a friend in Woody Sloan. All right, so now we got that all together. Whew, John Tompkins of the Great Lakes Gasser, thanks for being with us, man. I do appreciate it. It's been a long time for getting you on here, and we're so glad that you did.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I it's an honor, and again, thank you for everything you guys do. It's great having you at the track and your radio broadcast. It fits so well. You fit this culture so well, and we appreciate it.
We're writing out your $5 check to you as we speak. Okay,
I will. I'll take care of that, and whatever you need, I'll do that. But no, thank you so much, and I hope you guys are well, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Right now, we know that we ran a little bit late today, but on the affiliates of CKAW down the line, we're going to be back. We'll make it up on the Detroit Sports Authorities tonight at 7 o'clock. If you love Detroit sports as much as they do, you'll love the Detroit Sports Authorities 7 o'clock. We got a roll. It is Kiss Rock and Roll All Night here on your home of high-performance hits of the 60s and 70s, CKAW. Hi, Radio 76.